All right, so good morning again, everyone just joining us. Today we're going to talk about joint ventures and partnerships in real estate. This is a very important topic because it's one that allows you to do more, sometimes better deals, bigger deals. It allows you to leverage money from other people, leverage time if you don't have time. So if you have money but no time, you can get a hustler, the partner, and let them find and run the deals, or the opposite. If you have time but no money, if you have no money or time, then maybe you need two partners, one for the money, one for the time. And, you know, that's certainly possible. But you got to bring something to the table as well. You can leverage other people's resources, and that may, you know, not just money, but maybe a contractor has a crew, someone who has connections, someone who might have good credit or the ability to qualify for a residential or commercial loan on a project that you can't qualify for because you're self-unemployed and so forth. And also just doing more deals, a smaller piece of a bigger pie, is the concept of leverage. It's better, especially looking long-term over, you know, 3, 5, 10-year deals, you'd rather have multiple slivers of smaller, of bigger deals, and leverage more than just owning one or two. Okay, so a lot of good reasons to use partners. There's a lot of good reasons to not use partners. Let's talk about those as well. Let's be honest. Sometimes it's difficult to get along with or trust other people. And sometimes that's realistic, but sometimes that's, you know, what we call a personal problem. if you just simply don't trust people, you know, that could be a challenge. Whenever I do seminars in California, that's always the question. I don't trust anybody. But in all seriousness, you know, you have to have a certain level of trust with other people and divide up responsibilities, communicate, and, you know, we'll talk about choosing partners in a little bit and how to lessen the potential disasters that could come up with partnerships. You know, so partnerships could be good and they could be bad, depending on, you know, how you use them and how you go about it. So we're talking about JVs and partnerships, JV meaning joint venture. What's the difference? Legally, not much. A partnership is a more formal arrangement. It's usually two people in business together agreeing to carry on a business and share profits and losses, as opposed to a JV, which is a more of a short-term, limited-time, limited-scope relationship. Sometimes they'll cross over. So, for example, if you go in with a partner to buy, fix, and flip a house, clearly a JV, it's just that house. It's over when the house is sold. So that's a limited scope, limited time type of project. A partnership, more formally, you might form an entity with someone or have a partnership agreement and go out and buy houses together regularly. You know, that's definitely a contrast there. But what about buying a house and holding it for 5 or 10 years together? Is that a joint venture or is that a partnership? Well, you know, that's a good question. Depends really on what you want it to be. What if you bought it and held it with the intent to hold it for 5 years, and lo and behold, you came across a second one to do the same thing? Are you now partners? Well, you know, you have to define those types of relationships, not only in a sense of, you know, making sure your partner or partners understand what the relationship is, but also putting it in writing so you don't have any potential liabilities that can come back and bite you. So the proper way to use a joint venture or partnership, first of all, when I say partnership, there's a lot of ways to do a partnership. One is simply jointly owning a property. That's co-ownership. So A and B, co-tenants in common on a property, or a partnership agreement. where they're generally in business together as a general partnership or under a joint venture agreement co-owning it. Those options are all pretty bad. The problem with partnership law, whether it's a JV or a partnership, is you're liable for what you do and you're liable for what your partners do. And the liability is joint, meaning everybody's liable, and it's several, meaning everybody's liable for the whole. So if you're the deep pocket and you get a couple of hustlers out there as your partners with no money and they screw up, you can be caught holding the bag for the liability, which is why you would, if you were going to joint venture with someone else, you would want to use one of your corporate entities, you know, corporation or LLC, and then have a JV agreement with them or their corporate entity. It's not as important for you in terms of their liability. It's important for, you know, I mean, it's their liability, but more likely your liability. So it's crucial you use an entity in the JV agreement, but not crucial that they do. Although you want to probably encourage them to do it as well, simply because liabilities that can attach to their name, and I'll give you an example of that. My mom did a deal with someone to buy, fix, and flip in Florida many years ago, and they put it in the titles of the property in my mom's corporation and the individual's name, the JV partner's name, co-owners. Well, you know, everything went well, and they got a buyer full price, and they're going to closing, and it turns out that the JV partner had an IRS lien against his name, and so as soon as he took title to that property, the lien attached to the property. Now, it's only as to his half, but that's irrelevant because you can't sell the property without paying off the lien. So she had to call the IRS and negotiate it off, which she was able to do, but that's a risk. Whereas if the JV partner had an LLC, less likely to have an IRS lien against an LLC, especially if the LLC did less business arrangements than the individual did on his own without the corporate entity. So it's more likely you'll have an IRS lien against a person than an entity. Not impossible, but, you know, more likely. If you're going to do something longer than a couple of months, buy, fix, and flip, let's say you're going to hold a rental for some period of time, you can use a limited liability company, LLC, which is highly recommended, especially if you're going to do a more permanent partnership in business together, generally buying and selling or buying and holding houses or buying an apartment building or a commercial project. So that would definitely be the way to go, not in your own names. Now, sometimes if you're leveraging someone else's credit, you'll have to close title in their name so they can get the loan, but after closing, deed it over to an LLC of which you and he or she are the co-owners, the co-members, or partners, if you will. Okay, and I say that sometimes in this conversation interchangeably. So when I say partner, I don't necessarily mean general partnership. I mean partner under your entity, their entity, or you and them under an LLC. Okay, even though technically LLCs are owners are called members. And then the next issue is how do we title the assets? Because in a partnership arrangement, there's no requirement that the assets, namely the real estate, be titled in the partnership name or in the LLC name in this case. It could be in a manager's name. It could be in the LLC's name. It could be in one individual's name, you know, for the benefit of the LLC, whether it be a JV or a long-term partnership. It could be in both the partners' names. It could be in a land trust, which is the way I like doing real estate to hold. Those of you who know my thoughts about owning real estate, rental real estate, not in your name, obviously. In an LLC is better because it protects you from liability, but you want that extra level of privacy. You want to title it in a land trust. And then the beneficiary of the land trust can be the LLC, or if it's a short-term deal, your corporate entity and their corporate entity as co-beneficiaries. Okay? And in that case, instead of a JV agreement, you might have what's called a co-beneficiary agreement. And just to address, I know some people ask me this quite a bit, is if you're going to partner with someone, let's say on a JV-based short-term deal, and you're going to do an LLC, do you need a JV agreement plus an LLC operating agreement? And the answer is generally no. The LLC operating agreement is the document that lays out the deal for between the parties. So say who's responsible for what, who puts up what money, how do you split it, how do expenses get paid, what happens if there's a capital call, you know, who's responsible for what, and so forth. So you don't need both. If you were just going to own the property under both your corporate names or one of the corporate names, then you'd have a JV agreement. If you're going to do it under an LLC, the operating agreement. And if you were going to do it under a land trust, you could either have a JV agreement or what's called a co-beneficiary agreement, which is like, it just basically spells things out like a JV agreement. Okay. Next, I want to talk about choosing partners. This can make or break a partnership deal, you know. And when I say partners here, I mean whether you're talking about an LLC, a joint venture, a longer-term relationship, shorter-term relationship, doesn't matter. Obviously, the first one is personality. Can you get along with this person? Are they like you? Are they do they communicate? Do they do they say what they mean what they say, or are they people who say one thing and do another? Or, you know, the ones that I have trouble with are the passive aggressives who say nothing and then one day they blow up at you. Not good. Also, sometimes having like two type A personality types might clash. You know what I mean? A type A and a type B might be better. Do they have the same vision about how the project should go? Because otherwise you'll be fighting over, no, let's put in new carpet. No, let's not put in new carpet. Well, let's paint it red. No, let's paint it blue. So you got to have the same vision of what you're going to do with the project. Most importantly, I think skills. What does the other party bring to the table that you don't have? And that should be other than just money, because as we'll talk about later, you can borrow money and pay significant interest and still make more profit than giving up half the deal to a partner who puts up the money. So what skills do they have? Do they have experience in doing this type of deal? Do they have construction skills? Do they have, are they a real estate broker and have experience in pricing the house or staging it and something like that? What resources do they have? And that's other than money, what resources? Do they have, are they like a good JV partner who's got a crew of laborers that he could manage and you don't have to deal with? Do they have credit that they can use for a loan and so forth? What connections do they have? That could be important too. I mean, they may know other people that may be added to the partnership, or they may know someone who can get deals to the table, or they may know someone down at the county zoning, planning, building department to get your project through or so forth. Okay. And then lastly, we hinted at this earlier when we talked about personality, is communication. Are they a communicator? Because the biggest problems you're going to have in partnerships is lack of communication. So you got to address that right up front. And if you're talking to someone, meeting for coffee or whatever, or lunch to discuss a potential partnership, you got to have some communication there. And one extra thing which wasn't in my notes here, which I just thought of off the top of my head, is maybe doing a background search.
Yeah.
You know, that's not out of the question, especially if you're putting up all the money and they come into you and says, listen, I've got a great deal, but I have, you know, I don't have a, you know, a pot to pee in, but I got a great deal, and you're putting up all the money and you're putting your name on the loan. You might want to do a background search on this person and criminal and credit and Google to make sure that they're not, you know, someone right or might end up causing a problem for you. I just read a a great article. I'll give credit where credit is due. Jeff Watson is a colleague of mine, attorney, real estate investor. What he suggested was looking up their personal name. You could search on the Secretary of State website, you know, for LLCs. You could search by organizer or registered agent. So if you search and there's like 10 companies that the guy's owned and they've all been shut down for non-compliance, meaning not filing annual reports, that's important. That shows, you know, some sort of lack of consistency. Or if the company in question they're wanting to do business with you is delinquent for not filing annual reports and fees for the last 5 years. You know, that's not fatal, but, you know, some people forget. But, you know, you want to check these things. Okay? All right. Then we've got alternatives to partnerships. And by the way, for those of you who are listening, this is just a very small part of the Power Partnering e-course that's on the on-demand website that you can listen to and read and download and watch the videos and download the audience and so forth. So, you know, look for that if you want to get a little more detail about what we're talking about. Alternatives to partnership. So is a partnership always the way to go? Not necessarily. As I suggested earlier, maybe it's cheaper or easier to borrow money and not have to answer to a partner. Okay? Or if you're the one with the money, might it be easier to be a lender, less liability? You're not on title. You're not in the mix. You know, as a lender, your liability is pretty limited to third parties. So maybe you just take a lien against the property, and in doing so, you could take straight interest points, or you can do a participation loan where you get maybe, you know, a flat rate of interest, maybe 6 or 7%, and a couple of points plus a percentage of the net proceeds, which you'll be able to see on a HUD when they sell the property, okay? So, or some other formula you come up with. So you could sort of participate as a partner without having the liabilities of a partner by being a lender. From the other side of the equation, if you're bringing on a partner that has a construction crew and they're going to do all the work in exchange for a piece of the deal, is it easier to hire? Just hire a contractor. I know that I've done that quite a bit where I've hired contractors and I've partnered with contractors. In fact, one particular contractor is a good friend of mine. And I've hired him and I've partnered with him. It just seems to be when I partner with him, he does a better job. He's got a stake in the deal. He rushes to get it done. I mean, he's in there busting up in the windows to get in before we're at the closing table. And he's rushing to get it done to get paid. Whereas a contractor, you know, enough said, contractors. So there's good and bad of hiring or delegating some of the responsibilities to somebody else. And finally, I wanted to talk about how to avoid blow-ups in partnerships, because this is the thing that scares people the most about doing partnerships and the hesitation. The first thing is something we've discussed already, and that's just pick the right partners. You know, the same way with landlording. You want to have hassle-free landlords? Screen your tenants well. Same thing. Pick the right partner. Screen them well. You know, go through checklists. Ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. And if you don't know them, they don't come with a referral of someone's best friend or uncle, or even so, you should be, if you're putting up all the money in credit, to ask them for a background check, a credit check, a criminal check. I don't think that's, you know, if they're going to object to it, it probably says something about them. Or you might ask them something, you know, something of the sorts like, hey, Joe, you know, just curious, if I were to pull a credit report or a criminal background check on you, would I find anything that would give me hesitation? And just see what they say. You know, you're not asking them to actually do it. You're just saying, if I did, and see what they say. Just a curious question. Make sure you agree on all the details up front. And, you know, so who's going to do what and what happens if you don't do it? And here's the timelines, and put it in writing. Writing, even if it's, you can go anything from handwritten to a series of emails, more appropriately having an attorney draw up a JV or LLC operating agreement, just to hold each other accountable. That's all it's about. And, you know, sometimes people will give you objections, say, oh, it's too complex, let's just keep it simple. And you can do that. You can keep an agreement fairly simple, but you know, it's all the what-ifs. It's what you don't know that you don't know that's going to come back to bite you in a partnership arrangement. So, you know, better off to be safe than sorry. Communicate often and make sure you set that up front. We're going to talk or meet, you know, once a week, twice a week, by phone or in person, at the project, somewhere else, whatever. Have a schedule of meetings. And most importantly, especially if you're putting this in writing, which you should be, is having buyout provisions in case the partner either won't or can't do their part. So more often it's won't. They just go dark on you. They don't return calls. They get behind. They run out of money. They're juggling too many projects or whatever. They got personal problems. You know, if the person wants to meet you for a drink for lunch, not saying someone who has a drink for lunch is an alcoholic, but if they show up drunk, you could smell it on their breath, or smelling like weed, I'd be a little careful about that, a little cautious about that. And then, of course, buyout provisions if someone can't do their job. What if someone dies? What if they get divorced? What if they get arrested? What if they disappear? What if they become disabled? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's really important because you don't want to be negotiating it later, although you could renegotiate it later, depending on what side of the deal you're on. But having some formula, so if, let's say, for example, you're putting up the money and they're putting up the deal and the construction work, and they've got a crew, and their main, you know, construction assistant gets arrested and deported, or hurts himself on the job or whatever. So you want to have the right to either step in, hire a third party and take it off their side, or just buy them out. You know, you just think of all the what ifs, you know, what ifs, you know, and if you can't think of one, imagine you did know. What do I don't know that I don't know? Ask other people, you know, get suggestions. And that's why attorneys are good to draw up these agreements, because usually they've seen the collective stupidity of their clients and things that go wrong and are able to, you know, document the what-if and case scenarios. Okay? Again, that's just a, you know, snippet of information on partnering and JVs in the Power Partnering course online. You guys can dig into that. There's a lot of information there, videos, audios, workbook. We worked real hard on putting that together. Some sample, there's a lot of sample JV operating agreements and things like that in the course as well that you can use as a template. Okay. Questions?
Bill, I'm so thankful for this subject today. Am I audible?
Oh, thanks.
I do some business. This is Dan. I do some business in Canada, around Huntsville, Ontario. And a friend of mine 2 years ago got in a bad deal as far as a partnership. And he was actually a pastor, and the guy through their hub, through their office, was actually moving huge amounts of opium from Asia and having it delivered to their office. And this poor pastor gets flat out arrested. It was a real estate business that they were running in. So the whole thing on the background checks, I don't know if they would have or would have not found out things about the guy's past. He was totally legitimate as far as what their partnership looked like, but he ended up arrested. It took over a year to get it sorted out. He still can't leave the country because of a real estate deal and a partner, and not knowing what was going on, from his own office. So I've had great partnerships, but I'm so thankful for the what ifs that you're talking about. I've got an extreme case here. But, yeah, you talking about vetting your partners as well as you vet your renters
right.
is such a good subject. Thank you.
Right. Oh, boy. Now having just said that and scaring the bejesus out of everyone, probably not likely to happen. But,
no.
You know, it's just an example of how partners' problems can bite you. You know, like a simple one was the IRS example I mentioned earlier. This is, you know, wow. Just curious. I mean, how did they get together? Was he a member of the church?
No, oh no, absolutely not. He was a business guy that had moved in a few years before and had a whole lot of capital. My friend Randy had a whole lot of social capital and was raised in that demographic, so had all the deals and had all the people on the ground. And so the deal was he was really helping with the money and the management side of it. The investor partner and Randy had a lot. Randy had money in it as well, but he had the social capital and the working skills to make the deals work in that area and could find
mm-hmm.
the properties. So that's how it came together. So,
wow. Well, that's sometimes it's a good idea to do a background check or do a. I mean, maybe the guy had been arrested before. Who knows?
Yeah.
How do you do the background check? That's a simple.
You need their permission, but there's a number of websites. One we use is called AmeriUSA. It's like America, AmeriUSA.net. And there's a number of other ones. There's ones you can do without people's permission. It just basically pulls public information mostly and stuff on the Internet. But if you want a real criminal background check and a credit check, that AmeriUSA, you fill it out, put their info in, they email the person, they verify it's them and give permission, and then it runs the background check. It's about $30-$40.
AmeriUSA?
No, AmeriUSA.net, AmeriUSA.net.
Okay.
And there's a number, if you Google, there's a number of websites like that. And then there's there's the other type of websites, the sleuthing ones, that you could pull without their permission. But that's going to pick up, unless they have criminal convictions that are civil records of judgments and things, and even sometimes it doesn't even pick that up. If they hold like a pilot's license or a driver's license in a certain state and or possible addresses they've lived. If someone says, I've been in Colorado my whole life, and then you pull that and then you see addresses from all over the country, you know, that's
a red flag. Yeah.
Yeah. So at the very least, do the one where they don't know. Intellius, that's the one we use. Intellius.
One other quick question, Bill. No matter how simple you think that the partnership is, you still should get a lawyer involved and draw up papers. Is that what you're saying, or am I understanding that right?
I'll give you the lawyer answer. Of course, it depends.
okay.
You know, the better you know the person, the more experience they have, the simpler the deal, the less of a need for it. But it all depends what you have at risk, really, if you think about it. If you're putting up all the money and you don't know this person very well, even though they seem to be knowledgeable, I would think about having an attorney draw up one.
Okay.
And obviously, the more complex the deal, the more you need an attorney. And just as a suggestion from an attorney's standpoint, if you could come up with, you know, a dozen bullet points of what the deal is supposed to look like in English, then the attorney can translate that into legalese.
Okay.
Hey, Bill. Bill Stone here.
Yeah.
Great topic. Always a great topic. And could you talk a little about the legal ramifications of implying that you're in a partnership when you're not, and
the accidental partnership or the de facto partnership.
And also how to speak about being in business with someone or doing business with others and you're not partners, and you want to communicate
right.
that you're doing these things, but you're not partners. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Meaning you're not general partners. You're not in business together. You're just doing a JV.
I don't want to
borrow or lender relationship or whatever.
Yes. And haven't I heard you speak about accidentally implying that you're a partner, but
right.
even if people think you're a partner, then that's enough to if you've unwittingly represented yourself as a partner,
mm-hmm.
you build liability for yourself that you don't need to.
Potentially, yes. And a perfect example, and I've used this before in my seminars, is Bill and I decide that we're going to do a JV deal together, a buy, fix, and flip, either as a JV agreement or maybe you're just going to be a lender, right? And then deal's over, JV's over, right? And then I do another deal with you and then the third deal with you, and then I got like two or three deals going at the same time. Some of them you're a lender. Some of them you're participating in the profit. Some of them we're JV on.
Yes.
You know, it's getting a little fuzzy now. And then I run into Frank at Home Depot, and I said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I said, "Well, you know, I'm working on deals with. Where are you getting the funding?" I said, "Oh, my partner Bill."
Uh-huh.
Says the unwitting partnership, and then Frank meets up with you later and said, "Hey, I saw your partner Bill at Home Depot. You know, oh yeah, we're doing a lot of deals together." We both affirmed to this third party that we're partners and led them to believe we were general partners in business. And because of that, Frank decides to, you know, lend money, resources, whatever, to the partnership. Can he go after, you know, both of us, either of us or combination for recovery of money's lost? And the answer is probably.
Mm-hmm.
So you just got to be careful, you know, that when you communicate with third people, that you make sure that you communicate accurately. Sort of like common law marriage, you know, if you hold yourself out as husband and wife,
mm-hmm.
right?
People yeah.
often do that.
So
they live
I guess
together,
what
they have kids, right?
Right.
And they refer to the old man and the old woman, you know. And then people, I didn't know you guys weren't married.
All right. Well, I guess I've had trouble sort of because part of what I want to do in marketing is to tell people what I've been doing and what I want to do, of course.
Right.
But it lends some credibility to mention who I'm doing things with and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But so there's that fine line for me. I'm still struggling with
right.
Exactly how to couch all that without
mm-hmm.
tying my own self up, you know, in that
sure.
domain of liability.
Right. So if it's a past deal, you could say, I've done business transactions with the following parties. That's simple. That's
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
That's simple as that. Yeah, I'm currently involved in three projects with the following parties. As lenders,
okay, but being involved with doesn't imply partnership.
Not necessarily. I've done business
okay.
transactions with. Now, that
okay.
would cover partnership, lender, borrower, you know what I mean? That could be anything.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily imply that you're partners or – The current ones is a little more difficult because you could say I'm involved in a business transaction with the following parties on a real estate deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's not saying I'm in business with so-and-so regularly. In the general
right. sense. I see. Okay. All right. That helps. Thank you.
cool. Anybody else have any other comments, questions, or even situational things as scary as that was just brought up about drug dealing that maybe we haven't discussed before about partnerships? Or any part of this topic, generally speaking, that I haven't covered that you'd like me to cover or expand more upon?
Bill, one of the things that maybe I would like to see some more options on is basically the closing out of the partnership, the exit strategy. I had a really good experience just because we had a time frame and a good way of a good exit strategy. Would you have any tips on that so that things aren't left open-ended?
Right. Well, that's part of if you have a JV agreement, it should spell out what happens when you're done. What's going to happen? Who's going to wrap it up? Who's going to wrap up the accounting? Who's going to wrap up, you know, if you formed an entity, who's going to dissolve it? If you're doing taxes, how are you going to do them? And did you reserve some money for the accountant to account for this?
Good.
So that should be in the JV agreement.
Okay.
Or maybe a backup exit strategy. So, the purpose of this JV is to buy, fix, and flip. However, if it is unable to be sold within 90 days at a price that we agree on or to make money on, then the parties can opt to do something else, either specifically or whatever you negotiate. So you don't get into a fight later maybe about what happens, because it may just be that one of you says, well, just cut our losses. I'll lose five because I want my money back. And you say, well, no, let's hold out. Let's let it roll. Let's rent it and, for a year. Maybe the value goes up and we'll make more money. You know what I mean? You need to discuss that up front. Good questions, by the way. These are all really good comments and questions. Good discussion.
Hey, Bill. If I start going and syndicating apartment deals and I actually do go into this with a partner or two specifically to do that, then we're going to have in the syndicating materials and everything, we're going to have a big operating agreement and all of that. However, before we get to that point with a particular property, would you suggest that we also have a JV agreement spelling out duties?
So the JV agreement might say we're all putting up the following money and or resources and or whatever for the purposes of exploring whether we can put a syndication together for the following project. And you're going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And if it's successful, then we become the general partners or the managing members of a new LLC. Or if it doesn't work out, then here's how we do it. And, just spell it out.
Okay. So for something like that, this would be a place where I would start with bullet points and ship it off to my favorite attorney to reduce it.
Sure.
Or do you have something?
Sometimes they call it a pre-incorporation agreement. That's called,
okay.
Because when parties want to do something before incorporating and due diligence and things like this, they'll spell out a pre-incorporation agreement or a JV agreement, if you will, or a memorandum of agreement. Those are just titles. But it's just basically spelling out the relationship before you go forward.
All right. So would you have a template on your website to get started on that, or is that something where I should just send you some bullet points and let you help me reduce it to language? Okay.
Let me see if I can email me, and I'll see if I can dig one up on my computer. I know I have a pre-incorporation agreement somewhere in my computer. I haven't used it in a long time, but I know it's there.
Okay, thank you.
And, of course, once I find it, I'll post it up in the forums for the Power Partnering course so everyone has access to it.
Super. Thank you.
Okay. What else? Any other topics around this you want me to expand on or clarify?
Bill, I have a topic, but it's not on this. So I'll wait till everybody has gone through this,
yeah,
and then I'll ask my question. Okay.
Go ahead.
We've got a number of our students that are, you know, getting more and more rentals, and their tenants
mm-hmm.
are requesting to do auto pay or electronic rental
mm-hmm.
payments. And if
mm-hmm.
they don't have a product property manager, what is your suggestion on the best way for them to set those up?
You set it up with your bank. They have to go down to their bank and set up an auto pay.
Okay.
There are a number of services for landlords that allow you to do that too, like landlord software that does, you know, keeping track of tenants and that service or just that service standalone. There's a bunch of online services that do that. But the cheapest way to do it is just bank-to-bank transfers. You know, just set it up, you fill out some forms, and it does it automatically. You could do PayPal.
Okay.
You know, PayPal
All right.
could, you know, you could draw on a credit card, debit card. I'd like to give the tenant more options if they're short on rent to pay by credit card.
Yeah, yeah.
okay. But they could be debit card, credit card, or even bank account transfers out of PayPal.
Okay.
And they can set up auto recurring payments out of PayPal too.
Right. Okay. Okay. That helps. Thank you. I'll get back with everybody.
Yeah, it's 3% they charge, or 3.5% that PayPal charges. The bank thing is usually the cheapest, but it's the most hassle
yeah.
to set it up.
Oh, yeah.
Does anybody use one of those services that's cheap that you can recommend, other than PayPal and then going through your bank, like an online service? All right, well, maybe we'll have to come up with a little research and find out
yeah.
which are the best. Compare prices and come up with a list.
Yeah,
I do this. I went and talked to my bank about giving deposit slips, and I put the address underneath of the
mm-hmm.
rental on it. And
mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make sure if I gave this to my rental people, would they be able to – like get money out because they have the account? They said absolutely not. We should make them show identification.
Right.
Their name's not going to show up. So I felt pretty safe in doing that. So that is
yeah,
been
I've done
a really
that before
good...
many times. I forgot about that. I've done that before too. I've had tenants just you say, listen, go into any. We use First Bank, you know, it's a branch bank in Colorado, and just I said go to any, your local First Bank branch. Here's my account number. Take a blank deposit slip, fill it out, and write in the memo, you know, what property it's for. So when I look it up mm-hmm. online, because I have images in my online e-banking
yeah,
thing,
right.
And then just for good measure, text me and let me know what you deposited when, so I don't get confused on which deposit is what.
Yeah,
you can do that. That's probably the simplest way.
Yeah, I've been
at least
yeah,
on the tenant
working
end.
Out great.
Yeah, yeah. Forgot to mention that. Thanks for bringing that up.
Hey, Bill. Speaking of credit partners, so here's my question. A credit partner must have a net worth
mm-hmm.
sufficient to satisfy a lender. So all of the So in looking at that net worth, I guess for any other deals that credit partner has signed on as a credit partner, that shows up as a liability against his net worth. So eventually a credit partner can use up their usefulness
mm-hmm.
as a credit partner by having signed
mm-hmm.
on enough deals. Is that right?
Well, it depends what type of loan it is. If it's a non-recourse loan. And even a lot of commercial loans don't show up on someone's personal credit report, even though if they filled out an app, you know, with another bank, they're going to have to legally disclose what they have.
Okay.
But not all the commercial loans will show up on a credit report. And if it's non-recourse, then who cares?
Okay.
It's not going to use up anything. Bank can't go after them, so it's not like a liability for them. It's really like a liability for the company.
I see. Okay.
Right. Right. And it depends on how the loan is. So if the loan is to the LLC and he's a guarantor, it may not even show up on his credit report. But every lender, when they give you a loan app, says, are you a borrower or a guarantor on another loan? They're going to ask you that.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Okay. Okay. I had another question here, but I got to remember it, so I'll come back in if I...
Okay. If that's all the questions we covered.
I got one more.
Oh, yeah, shoot.
Okay, so thinking of asset protection, so I have an LLC, and I just went to file my annual fee with the state to remain in good standing, and I did not have my name on any of these records with the state that that could show up on a public search, but I did put my own name on the bottom of the form that says I'm the person filling out this form. So did I just blow my cover?
Yes.
Okay.
In a search it won't, but if they look up a company, the history of documents will show.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe I need to form a new LLC and shift everything over if I want to maintain that.
It depends. I mean, like I said,
anonymity.
Try searching. I don't think that in Colorado the parameters is who filed it. I don't think that's one of the search parameters. I think it's organizer, registered agent, and that's it. But double-check that.
All right.
If you want to put my name as the person who filed it, that's fine.
Okay, thanks.
But by the way, if you put your email in as the person who gets, you know, notices of any changes, that's not public. That's not public.
Okay. Thanks.
You got it. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for participating. We'll wrap it up with that. And any follow-up questions, feel free. And also encourage you to go online and check out the Power Partnering course. It's all there. And then some. Enjoy it.
What's the exact website for that, Bill?
It's at realestateinvestortraining.com. Just go to realestateinvestortraining.com. Oh, by the way, just as an aside, the on-demand site is realestateinvestortraining.com, but we're in the process of moving that to LegalWiz.com. So it'll be like members.LegalWiz.com, and there'll be a link on there so it won't be confusing, and I'll forward everything over. But I wanted you guys to beta test it before everybody else, you know, does, to make sure that there's no kinks in it. So I don't want to, you know, because we've got, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 members, people who bought courses or memberships in that. So I don't want to unleash it and have 100 calls. So if you wouldn't mind, I'll send out an email just to remind you. You know, go to this site and log in there and see if everything works for you.
Thanks, Bill.
You got it. Take care, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks.